On the order of service here, it says weaving some threads, and that's sort of what the next part of the service is going to be about. As we sort of were planning this, we come up with this idea of tapestry. One of the things we talked about was tapestry and how perhaps our lives are a bit like a tapestry that have sort of been woven together, threads of circumstance, creating who we are. And four of the group are going to come up now. Actually, in preparing for my two-minute introduction to these people, I become quite an expert on tapestry and tapestries. Apparently, the oldest medieval tapestry in France is the apocalyptic tapestry, which is made up of 90 panels, illustrations from the Book of Revelation, which is a bit of a daunting thought. So imagine having that hanging in your dining room. It'd be the conversations would probably be very colourful. In fact, it wouldn't be hanging in your dining room because it's made up of six panels, 24 metres long by 6 metres high. Like it's huge. And apparently, out of the 90 panels that it originally made, there's only 71 now. And I thought, gosh, Revelation is. If any book you want to know the end of the story, Revelation is that book, and wouldn't it be terrible if the missing panels were the last ones? So you've got to imagine now for this next section, there are four tapestries here. One's Pinky's, one's Kylie's, one's Paul's and one's John's, and they're going to be sharing something of the story of their life. And so they probably won't be talking about every panel there, and maybe they'll just talk about one panel, or even the panel that isn't finished yet might be what they'll be talking about. At the end of the service, we're going to have a time, we're not going to have the usual question time, but a time where you can just perhaps meditate on what's been said today, and maybe something has struck a chord with you or moved you or reminded you of something in your life or was a challenge to you. And so we're going to get you, you'll have the opportunity to write, you know, that thought on the whiteboard at a time at the end of the service. So you might want to keep that in your mind as these people come and speak. So the first person, Pinky's going to come now and just share something from what's been happening in her life, and then Kylie is going to come and speak to us.
Good morning. As I have shared previously, I'm not going to go into the intricate weavings of my little panel of tapestry, so hopefully you get a bit of an essence of where I'm at. As I've shared here previously, I'd find myself these past few years with myriads of questions, some quite unsettling regarding my Christian faith. The mind whizzing away, inundated with different emotions, looking for answers. What do I hold on to? What do I jettison? And what makes sense to me? It has not been an easy journey, but a necessary one for me. Coupled with this, for the last 2 years, my work has been a tumultuous place, leading to my resignation in the middle of this year. Well, it's not a surprise to you to say that I have not arrived. In the meantime, it's been a saving grace to be part of this community, particularly to be part of my home group. I know I am buoyed and am grateful to meet and commune with kindred spirits. I'm grateful for the guidance and counsel of those who are wiser to have trodden a similar path before me, and you know who you are. Leaving it at that, I'd just like to read to you a poem Claire shared with us as a part of an Advent meditations last year. This is a poem I have revisited many, many times over many mornings, sometimes in tears, because it resonates so well with my spirit. A poem that brings me comfort and hope. This poem is called A Blessing for Travelling in the Dark. I will reread this poem at the end of the service at this meeting for you to meditate on. So it's called A Blessing for Travelling in the Dark by Jan Richardson. Go slow if you can. Slower, more slowly still. Friendly, dark, or fearsome. This is no place to break your neck by rushing, by running, by crashing into what you cannot see. Then again, it is true, different darks have different tasks. And if you have arrived here unawares, and if you have come in peril or in pain, this might be no place you should dawdle. I do not know what these shadows ask of you, what they might hold that means you good or ill. It is not for me to reckon whether you should linger or you should leave. But this is what I can ask for you. That in the darkness there be a blessing, that in the shadows there be a welcome, that in the night you be encompassed by the love that knows your name.
Hi, everyone. Hi. I don't know most of you. My name's Kylie. I'm relatively new here, so there are many of you I haven't met, many of you who haven't met me. I'm absolutely terrified right now and have been, yay for that, I'll embrace that, shall I? And have been ever since the home group said to me, Kylie, you should share your story when we lead service. And I think I went pale then and I feel pale now. The interesting part of this is that for my work, I do public speaking. So I'm actually very comfortable speaking to people. But the problem is I'm comfortable speaking to people with my business outfit on, my suit, my heels. So putting on my jeans this morning felt very odd indeed. And I'm comfortable speaking about the professional things that I speak about. So to come and speak about me is a very odd and frightening thing indeed. So we'll see how that goes. The home group seemed to think that I have something that might be of interest to you. When I first came to the home group, they asked me to share my story of how I had come to where I am at the moment in my Christian faith. And part of that story is what they seem to think is mildly interesting. So they're shaking their head at me going, Kylie. So only because I think I don't have a traumatic tale to tell. I don't have a story where I think I've overcome anything more than anybody else has overcome and perhaps less. But I guess what I do have to offer is maybe my unique perspective about church and about religion. Well, I don't know how unique it is. You can tell me afterwards if you like. To me, religion or church doesn't really mean a lot to me. I grew up believing that my family was Christian. And I grew up believing that in a God. And in hindsight, I can't explain, and neither can my family, why that was so. I had memories of us going to church as a family, which later turned out to not be quite accurate. I also really enjoyed religious education at school. I always had a sense that there was a God, but couldn't really understand. I would ask to go to Sunday school because other kids from my school would go to Sunday school, and I was told, oh no, we don't really do that in our family. But I did have a sense that our family was Christian, and really through my childhood, that sense was really important to me. I've had a lot of medical history, complicated, you know, illnesses and things like that. And so it was really important to me that this God was present, even though it wasn't something that was talked about in our family. And a real turning point for me in my Christian faith was as a 17-year-old, my neighbour down the road was Catholic, invited me to a Catholic youth group called Antioch. Does anyone know it? Some people know it? Yep. So we weren't Catholic, we weren't anything, But this friend invited me. This was a really good friend, a friend who was trusted by my family, was a frequent visitor to our house, was well known in our family. And she invited me, and that was fine. I went along, and I really loved it, mostly because we sang a lot. And music is a massive rescuer for me in my life. It's the way I communicate often with God. And so I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the singing, and I enjoyed listening to people my own age sharing their faith and sharing their ideas about God and their walk and so on. What happened was, as a result of that, I became very involved, I guess, as a Christian. I started to talk about being a Christian. I started to talk about God. I was very keen to be involved in music and in worship and all of those kind of things. And something really unexpected happened in my family. It was unexpected to me. My mother and father sat me down, my mum and dad, and said, we want you to stop doing this. We want you to stop going. I was like, well, why? You know, this is really good. And I thought you would like it. And they said, well, first of all, they said, well, they're Catholic. I said, well, what's the problem with that? I'd never heard that there was any problem with another, you know, what's the problem with that? And they couldn't quite explain that. So then they said, well, actually, it's not about that. It's that, you know, our family doesn't believe in God. Like, that's not what we do. So you can't do that. And I remember being really surprised. I said, but we used to go to church. And they said, oh, no, we went to church once when my younger brother was baptised, because otherwise they wouldn't baptise him. And that must be what you remember. And I was really surprised. I said, no, we don't believe in God, and you need to stop. You need to stop talking about all this. You need to stop doing it. Well, I'm kind of the person that when someone says don't do something, that I kind of do it anyway. And really that's been the theme for me for the rest of my life since then, is really fighting for, well, idealistically I like to say fighting for the right to believe in God, but maybe it did start more as a bit of a rebellious thing. I will believe in God just because you tell me I can't. But it actually became a really distressing time in our family. What happened as a result of that was my sister started coming along. My sister is 2 years younger than me. Some of you know her. And she started coming along to Antioch as well, and she became very involved in Christian life as well. And this became a real point of conflict in our family. We were told constantly this was not acceptable. We weren't to speak about God. We weren't to go. We were told stories. My mum actually said to me, she said, you'll grow out of it. I used to go to a Christian youth group when I was young, and look, see, I've grown out of it, so you'll grow out of it too. My father was very offended that we would try to talk to him about God at all. He was became very anti, and this was very unusual for me. I grew up in a very loving home. There were no issues. We sort of didn't talk about much, which is probably why I had thoughts and ideas that weren't quite accurate. But this was all very strange, to see my parents so aggravated about this particular issue. The next thing that really was the last straw was that my younger brother, he also started coming along. This is over a number of years. And well, that was just the thing that became really difficult. Yes. Is there something in particular you'd like me to mention, John? Oh, you're giving me he's giving me time. He promised to give me time. Okay, so, right, there's my time. So, what happened then, my younger brother hit a point where at the end of his year 12 career, he'd been in line to do engineering. He got into engineering at uni, and being the bravest of the three of us, he declared that he was going to go to Bible college instead. Now, I cannot tell you how tense things were in our house at that time, with three young adults in the family trying to be Christian in a family where there was active, whatever the word is, you know, people actively working against that. So I think really what I want to share with you is that theme of really my brother and sister and I still to this day walk a Christian faith, and that looks very different for each of us. Some of you know my brother as well. And that's okay, but what we really have in common is trying to, and we often have conversations about this over the years, how do we live a Christian life that's more than just being good? Our family would say to us a lot, but we're good people. You don't need to be Christian to live a good life. And so that became a real challenge for us over the years. What does it mean to be the difference between having a faith and just being good? And we're still trying to nut that out. And I think the other big thing for me has always been hope. The word hope is really important. And I think when I hear the poem that we've been talking about in our home group that Pinky just read, that to me, darkness and hope are two things that coexist at the same time. And I don't think I would be where I am today or who I am today or talking about the things that I do today without having a sense that God equals hope, and that and the dark always coexist, and that's okay. And so I don't know if that's quite what my home group wanted me to tell you today, but for me, walking in the dark has been something that I think I have done a lot over the years, and I'm sure everybody has. And really for me, that idea that God is hope. And even if I can't see him, or even if I don't know what that means, or even if I don't know how to articulate that in churchy ways or in any other way, all I really can do and try to do is just hold on to that one idea that God is hope. And to me, that's a way, I guess, to not just walk out of the darkness, but to be in the darkness sometimes and be comfortable with that. So thank you for listening to me.
Let me read to you a short psalm of David. And if anyone lived, or who's, if anyone had a colourful tapestry of life, it would be this guy who spent a lot of time too in the dark sort of spaces. This is Psalm 13, and it's interesting because one commentary said it's his hope that turned him around even in these short few verses of Psalm 13. He wrote here, "Long enough, God, you've ignored me long enough. I've looked at the back of your head long enough. Long enough I've carried this ton of trouble, lived with a stomach full of pain. Long enough my arrogant enemies have looked down their noses at me. Take a good look at me, God, my God. I want to look life in the eye so that no enemy can get the best of me or laugh when I fall on my face. I've thrown myself headlong into your arms. I'm celebrating your rescue. I'm singing at the top of my lungs. I'm so full of answered prayers." John.
Good morning. A couple of weeks ago, I decided to write something down. I like writing. And it was after I'd spent some time with Claire in experiencing some of her spiritual direction. And she's outside. A beautiful experience. And as she helped me walk into the love of God, it was a beautiful experience. And it, because I guess I've been, you know, having come from a family and a background of having to be certain that I'm right, you know, conservative Christianity, a lot of us have been there, okay? We had to be right, and they were wrong, and even the Catholics were wrong, you know. God, where did that all go? God, it was crap. And being part of a, my family being part of a missionary organisation promoting that, but with strong love and care. And then realizing that our life is essentially what we make it. Being confronted with the, you know, giving myself, like everyone here did, I guess, in church as a young person, to Beach Mission, to evangelism, to helping people. And then discovering that the foundations of that evangelical Christianity just started to, for me, started just melt away. That it was just an idea. Even the Bible, you know, discovering increasingly difficulties with how the Bible portrayed things. Things that I planned in my life didn't all work out. My marriage was one of them. But happily, my relationships with all of those people are wonderful, my daughters particularly. And elements of what I thought I could do in my career did not work out. But I always thought you trusted God and, you know, things would work out. But of course, they didn't. And so I guess the part of this century has been me moving from, does God really exist, to discovering really the need to decide. In the end, it's a decision. And I decided God existed, whatever God had looked like. I didn't know about Jesus at that stage. This is going back 02, 03. And meeting people who didn't know God, weren't Christians, lovely people, living a spiritual life. Then I also was aware of the lack of integrity in my life over a number of years. Then I met Michael Prince, and at a business function, invited me to this church. So again, re-met, I should say. Mark and I have met over many years. We knew each other, I guess, when we were 18 or 19 at uni. And introduced me to coming here. And here I was ready for just exploring God more fully and getting to know God and getting to know, understand Jesus more fully and bring some, I guess, it's really the integrity, isn't it? The heart, the soul, the mind, the body, to my life. And it's just been a beautiful experience being here, being part of the home group, being able to share a lot of that story, and being able to immerse myself in God without the dogma. And that's just been such a beautiful experience, that no, God is here, God is. I have no idea who God is, what he looks like. But to get to know Jesus and understand Jesus more fully. So, short story. Well, I think I've done my five, haven't I, Phil? Time with Claire. A couple of weeks ago, I decided to go and have a coffee after spending time with her. Beautiful experience. And I decided it's time to write it down. You know, I could say, and I've learned from Peter. I love Peter's curiosity and his lack of certainty. So this is my sort of emerging I could be wrong creed. September 2016. I believe God is, and God's driving force is love. The other thing that came to me was, the other beautiful part of the journey recently has been, of course, attending the retreats, the Courage to Lead retreats. They've been really useful for me, and again, Michael's been part of those. And it'll emerge. And so out of that has come some great, real things that I can, I think, be certain about. God is best represented in our world by that great spiritual seer, Jesus of Nazareth, 4 BC to 26 AD. Jesus lived, I needed to say that, historical. Okay, historical, he's real. Jesus lived and showed us his plan for the new world. The plan asks two. Love God and love each other. Be wholehearted and full-hearted. Be authentic. Be compassionate together with others in suffering. and particularly towards the marginalised. I remember reading Matthew many times and the Sermon on the Mount, and gee, that made sense to me. And just to say, this is my mission. This is God. This is Jesus' plan for the world. I mean, in a sense, don't need anything else. And all the misunderstandings about the Old Testament and the inaccuracies and the things that are contradictory there, I can move them away by just focusing on Jesus and interpreting everything just through the lens of Jesus, and discard the things that are inaccurate or don't make sense, or turn them around and view them through Jesus' lens. It's just wonderful. So Jesus' plans ask us to live in and show loving kindness, joy and delight, equanimity. I love that word. Learnt it in June. Do not ask me to prove God to you or show that God exists. God is within and beyond science. God may not be any gender and could be all genders. God is the source of our best selves. Jesus is our best guide. And there are others. Like any belief system, we've all got them. It takes a leap of faith and courage. I believe we are our best selves when we take this leap of faith into God's love and Jesus' new world. We don't know everything, but we know enough. So jump anyway. Thank you.
A few years ago, I started exploring some of those difficult passages in the Bible while I was at the same time trying to make sense of what I believed and whether I had any rational basis for being a Christian. I started my home group with the help of Lindy, partly to provide a safe place for a bunch of newbies to the church, who also turned out to be on the margins of the Christian club, but partly to have some friends who would journey with me. And that group has been wonderful for me. And so I spent a lot of time reading and reasoning and drinking. But there comes a time when no amount of further reasoning or drinking pints will advance the cause any further. In the last couple of years, after reading Matthew and reacquainting myself with Jesus and his commands, thank you, Peter, I've discovered new reasons for continuing to identify as a Christian. And they don't have to do with dogma or membership of faith clubs, though there is some of that I still hold. And I want to say something rather provocative, that if we are really serious in searching for the truth, we wouldn't come to church to do that. Because church confirms what we already believe. It's the biggest case of confirmation bias that we can have. That's not why we come to church. And that's a real challenge for me. My key discovery has been that, don't laugh at this, nobody really knows what's out there. We all live as if we know, as if something or someone is true. We get to a certain point of understanding through hard work, through thinking, but the next step is one of faith. And for me, that's why dogma can be so dangerous, because we could be wrong. Thank you again, Peter. Coercing someone else to our way of thinking is a kind of violence. And so we need to walk lightly. For me, the moment that I was able to accept living as if God was true was reading a book called My Bright Abyss by Christian Wiman. He talked about a moment where, after a great personal suffering of dealing with a horrible cancer and a horrible treatment, after having left behind his fundamentalist faith, he walked with his wife spontaneously into a church that was on the path that he was going. And in that space, in that dark space, he reacquainted himself with God. In his words, he chose to live life as if God existed, and as if God was a God of love, a little candle in a dark place. And so that's me right now, especially with the rise of the far right in Australia and America and in Europe. I hold on to the light because I have hope, because in everything there is a crack. That's where the light gets in.